Narottam Das Thakur. One of the most prominent embodiment of compassion acharyas of our parampara, our disciplic succession, lived in Vrindavan for several years. He was the son of a zamindar, which at that time in India was likened to being a king. A zamindar was one who owned a very large span of property with many, many people who were living on those properties. Villages, towns, sometimes cities. And under the emperor, he was given authority to make laws, to take taxes, and generally they were extremely wealthy. The father of Narottam, Krishnananda, had only one son. So Narottam Das Thakur was the heir to everything. Thank you. When he was just a child, he had the association of a very dear devotee of the Lord, who would narrate to him the beautiful pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And just as Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the primary Vedic literature. It is the culmination, the summum bonum, the crest jewel of all the Vedas. It is about Krishna and his various incarnations. But most of the stories are stories of devotees. Because Krishna teaches the world, especially through the lives of devotees. Because Krishna comes to this world, especially out of his compassion for all of us. Aham bija prata pita. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, I am the father, the mother of all living beings. And just as a mother or father has very, very unconditional love for their child, at least they're supposed to, and such love for a good father and mother is very spontaneous. When I was a child, sometimes I was not very obedient to my parents, because as a teenager, I was part of a counterculture or a movement that was very much questioning and revolting against the standards of the older generation. That's what it was in the 1960s in America. And because I was so distracted by ideologies and philosophies and desire for social change, I didn't do very well in my studies. Now, the children my age living next door, they did really good in their studies and they were very obedient. But still, my parents loved me more than them. Why? By all logical calculations, they should have loved them. Everything they wanted me to be, they were. And everything they didn't want me to be, I was. But still, because I was their child, they loved me. That's the nature of a nice parent. Srila Prabhupada explains this psychological state where even if a child is blind, the parents will call him Kamalochan, one who has lotus-like eyes. Because that's the nature of a parent. Now, in its total, full, complete perfection, that is Krishna's love and concern for each and every one of us. Because Krishna is our parent, eternal. Krishna tells in Gita, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Mamaivam so jivaloke, jiva buddha sanatana. We're eternally part of Krishna. We are eternally children of Krishna. We are eternally loved by Krishna. Satyam param dhimahi. We meditate on that absolute truth. And in great scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand something deeper about the nature of the love of the absolute truth. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was at Prayag giving a discourse to Srila Rupa Goswami, he told that the subject of the loving mellows of reciprocation between Krishna and the devotees is like a vast ocean. An ocean that has no bottom and no shores. In other words, a limitless ocean. He said, all we could do is try to explain one drop from that ocean. That is the greatness of God. But that single drop from that limitless ocean can actually inundate, completely flood the entire universal creation. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Krishna is an ocean of compassion. Dinabandhu Jagatpate. He is the friend even of the most fallen. Because however fallen we are, Krishna always loves the soul. As we see in the story of Prahlad, Krishna was very angry with Hiranyakashipu. He appeared as Narasimhadev and was roaring with anger. And he did a really good surgical operation. He destroyed all the demoniac qualities that were embedded within the mind and the body of Hiranyakashipu. But in the process, he liberated his soul. And Prahlad loved his father. He hated everything his father was doing, but he loved the soul of his father. How a little 5-year-old child could love the soul of a person who was trying to torture him, defame him, psychologically attack him at every moment, and ultimately was trying to murder him. Prahlad loved his father because Prahlad was connected to Krishna. It wasn't Prahlad's love, it was Krishna's love. Ultimately, all love is Krishna's love. And the soul, part and parcel of Krishna, we are also naturally empowered with part and parcel of Krishna's love. And that love is for reciprocation, ultimately with Krishna. And here in Vrindavan, we find an even deeper understanding that the ultimate supreme lover of Krishna is Sri Radha, the Hladini Shakti. And a part and parcel of that love is within the heart of every living being. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajya Kabunoi Saravanadi Sudhikiti Kodiye Udoi. Lord Chaitanya taught by associating with devotees of the Lord and chanting the holy names, this love that is inherent within us, Krishna Prema, is awakened. Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Goda Cheshenama. It was at Prayag, during this conversation, that Rupa Goswami composed this verse, that there are many, many incarnations of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam tells, just like waves in the ocean, the Lord appears in so many forms with so many names within the various universes of Brahma's creations. And Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. And all of these various expansions, planetary expansions, incarnations of all different varieties throughout history of creation, their origin is Krishna. This is the verdict of the scripture. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and certainly all these other great incarnations are God. But Krishna manifests the fullest, deepest, most complete loving nature of God. We read about Putana. She came to murder Krishna when he was just born. She had such a wicked, cruel heart. She disguised herself as a beautiful lady and deceived even Krishna's own mother and father and relatives. But her motive was to kill him. But ultimately Krishna killed her. Her body. But to her eternal soul, Krishna gave Putana a relationship as his own mother for the rest of eternity in this spiritual world. This is Krishna. He didn't just give liberation. Liberation into Brahman is what ordinary asuras get from Krishna or other incarnations. But Krishna gave her the role of an assistant of Yashoda Mai in this spiritual world. What great yogis, what great Vaishnav devotees may spend lifetimes to achieve. And she did no sadhana. All she did is try to kill Krishna. Before that, her whole life was wicked and cruel. She killed tens and thousands of infant babies and drank their blood and ate their flesh. But because she approached Krishna like a mother, Krishna took away all her sins in a few seconds and then gave her the service of mother. This is the mercy of Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate. But Rupa Goswami tells that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is even more munificent and merciful than Krishna. Although he is Krishna, so how could anyone be more merciful than herself or himself? Materially, it's a contradiction. So if I'm speaking to His Holiness Chandramali Swami Maharaj and say, Maharaj, you are more merciful than yourself. It's almost an insult. But for Krishna, who has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies, and his highest shakti or mercy is his love, his vadini shakti. Krishna is conquered by the love of Sri Radha. We were discussing this yesterday. Radha Krishna Paranaya Vikriti Hladini Shakti Rasma. The Absolute Truth or God is one. But that one Supreme Truth is eternally two. For the purpose of love. It is one thing to be love. It is another thing to love. A dynamic relation of love. In this material world, there are so many frustrations and limitations to the exchanges of love. When we fall in love with each other, it may be as lover and beloved, or parents and children, or friend and friend. But whoever we're loving, if we don't understand and fully realize their eternal soul, we're loving a personality and a body that's ever changing. It's very limited. Eventually it's going to die. And before that, there could be so many forms of betrayal, disappointment. So therefore, one comes to a spiritual path. If I'm going to love, then it's going to be just in a state of being pure existence. Because within this world, my only experience of relationships is they bring limited pleasure, frustration, and death. of the great Vedic scriptures, and especially Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, describe spiritual loving relationships, personal loving relationships, which is beyond the mukti of impersonal liberation. It's intimate and personal in its perfection. And what is the origin of that? It's Krishna manifesting his own counterpart as Sri Radha, as the supreme lover and beloved, who are eternally existing in this spiritual world, and whose pastimes are limitlessly deep, ever increasing, perfect in total satisfaction, without selfishness, because it's based on pure love forever. And all love is part and parcel of that love. And when God comes to this world out of love for his children, comes to invite us back into that realm that is our true home. So how is Lord Chaitanya more merciful than Krishna? We discussed yesterday how Lord Chaitanya is seeing the nature of Sri Radha's love is so deep and so pure. Her love for Krishna is all-pervading. There is no particle of space it can expand beyond because it's already everywhere. And yet, at every moment, it is expanding unlimitedly forever. This is love in the realm of eternity. Krishna is Madan Mohan. There is a place not far from here where the Yamuna River used to flow, Madan Tera. There's a tree. And there, Kamadev, who in the Western world we sometimes call Cupid, who's very powerful, who is that potent energy that attracts people to each other on a sensual and emotional level within this creation. And Kamadev wanted to attract Krishna. So he took the best of his arrows and pointed it toward Krishna. But when he aimed it and looked at the beautiful form of Govinda, he went into such a state of ecstatic trance, he fell on the ground in samadhi. So in Sanskrit, his name is Madan, and Krishna's Madan Mohan, that he bewildered the heart of Madan, who bewilders the entire world, Krishna bewilders. And Sri Radha is Madan Mohan Mohini. Her love even conquers the heart of Krishna. Now this doesn't minimize Krishna, that Radha is better than Krishna, because they are one, but two. It is the supreme love of the Absolute Truth. Sri Radha is the Supreme Mother of devotion. And Krishna wanted to taste the sweetness of Sri Radha's love. And he also wanted to distribute that love, even to people who were most unqualified. He did not consider who was fit or unfit. The only qualification, wherever we're born, whatever we've done, whatever we have not done, is just to accept the gift that he's giving us with a sincere heart.
Dinahina yata chilo hadina ma udharilo thara sakshi jagai madhai.
We read so many avatars how, in order to protect the innocent people and the principles of true dharma, killed various demons, Ram, Kumbhakarna, and Ravana, Varaha, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Narasingadev, Hiranyakashipu, and Krishna, so many. But Lord Chaitanya, who comes in the mood of Sri Radha's love, Lord Chaitanya didn't kill anyone. And yet the people who were coming were as demoniac as ever. But he was killing their demoniac propensities and awakening in their hearts their true inherent nature. Krishna Prem, love for God. That is the nature of Radha's love. So Sri Chaitanya is more merciful than Krishna because he's Krishna with the compassion and the love of Sri Radha. And what was his weapon? His weapon was the compassion that he empowers within the hearts of his devotees. And the devotees express their compassion by helping the Lord to spread the Yuga Dharma. The simplest, most powerful of all spiritual processes. The scripture tells us in Satya Yuga, the recommended process was meditation. But what type of meditation? What type of austerity? What type of lifestyle to actually perfect that meditation? Incredible. In Treta Yuga, it was performing of yajnas, or great, great sacrifices with the chanting of mantras in perfection. In Dwapara Yuga, it was worshipping the Lord with a completely fixed mind and senses. But in Kali Yuga, the process is very simple and can be done even by a child. And all the perfections that can be achieved through all the other processes of dharma and religion can be perfected simply by sincerely chanting God's holy names. This is the weapon of Lord Chaitanya. He's giving Hadinam. Hadinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasteva, 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 Gatir, Andhyata. In this age of Kali, it is the unparalleled means of deliverance. But Lord Chaitanya taught with it the consciousness, the way we must actually adjust our life to truly access the supreme power of grace that is within the holy names. Trinarapi sunichena tador ibase hishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Krishna came in the form of Lord Chaitanya and took the role of his own devotee to teach us how to live and interact with others and ultimately with God, feeling oneself more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant and forgiving than a tree, finding great joy in offering honor to others and not expecting or demanding such honor for ourselves. In the path of bhakti, if we don't live by this principle and take it very seriously, then no higher conceptions can really be digestible to our hearts. Scholarship, we could memorize and learn and debate so many things, which is very useful if it is done properly. But love is an experience of the soul within the heart. And to chant the holy names in this spirit of Trinadabhi Sunichena is actually foundational to actual realization on the path of bhakti. Narottam Das Thakur, he was just a child, the son of someone who was like a king, who lived in great luxury. But he was so deeply attracted to just be with this simple devotee who loved to talk about Lord Chaitanya and his associates and their love for Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur understood this is real wealth. Harikatha, to hear about Krishna from the lips of somebody who loves Krishna, nothing can compare. He was eating fine foods. He was wearing nice clothing. He was living in very, very nice circumstances. He had a very secure future. When you have parents like this, you don't need life insurance or health insurance or any of that stuff. He didn't have to worry about mortgages. Everything was there. Everything materialistic people are struggling and striving for the most hours of their lives, he had it. But he didn't even see a particle of satisfaction, fulfillment, or value compared to what he was experiencing by hearing Krishna Katha, hearing this beautiful narration of the loving exchanges between the Lord and the devotees. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj, he expressed the same realization. He was a great king, but not a zamindar king. He was actually the emperor of the world. And he was at the peak of his youth. And somehow or other, he was out in the forest and he got really thirsty. And in his torment of thirst, somehow or other, he acted completely opposite from his nature for just one moment. Because Parikshit Maharaj respected and honored everyone. As the king, he understood on behalf of God, I am everyone's servant. And that's how he lived. But he made a mistake because of thirst. He was bewildered, and he put a dead snake on Samik Rishi's shoulder. Samik Rishi Prabhu is here. And the little son, Sringi, he was just a small boy. He was so angry. Just as King Parikshit fell under the prey of thirst, Sringi fell under the prey of krodha, or anger. And he cursed the king to die by being bit by a real snake in 7 days. Now, nobody's afraid of a dead snake. But a lot of people are afraid of living snakes. So Parikshit made a little tiny mistake, and he was cursed to die. But he took it as a blessing and went to the river Ganga, Sukatal. That place is not far from here, actually. He just wanted to hear about the ultimate purpose of life from self-realized souls. What is the essence of all scriptures? What is the prime duty of a person who is about to die? That applies to everyone. And Shukadev Goswami, among all the great, great self-realized seers of the truth, was unanimously requested to speak. And after many days, when Shukadev Goswami was reciting the 10th canto, Parikshit Maharaj explained, previously, I didn't drink water for a few hours, and I was so disturbed. But now I have not taken any water or any food. I haven't slept for so many days, and I'm completely enthusiastic and absolutely satisfied because I'm drinking the nectar of the river Ganges that's flowing from your mouth in the form of descriptions of Krishna's leelas. Because materialistic things can only give some materialistic security and pleasure, at the best. But Harikatha actually awakens the supreme inner treasure of the wealth of the soul, which is immortal. So Narottam Das Thakur was so attracted to hear. And as he was listening to the stories of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's associates, and even the associates of the associates of the associates, one of his favorite stories to hear was the life of Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya never even directly met Lord Chaitanya. He was a servant of a servant of a servant. But such love, such Sharanagati, even through so many difficult situations. When will I meet such a person? That will be the wealth of my life. And ultimately, Narottam Thakur, he left his home and came to Vrindavan. And he stayed where our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, stayed, at the Radha Damodar temple. And when he first came, who did he meet? Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda Goswami, Jiva Goswami. He was initiated and accepted as his guru, Lokanath Goswami. In this way, this was about over 400 years ago. Vrindavan was a very simple place. When Lord Chaitanya came here 500 years ago, practically all of the holy places of Vrindavan had been forgotten over the millenniums since Krishna's appearance. So many foreign invasions, so much plundering, so much destruction. Lord Chaitanya came here to revive Vrindavan in its true glory. He personally worshipped Gopal, or Srinathji, who was installed on top of Govardhan Hill, and who came down for the Lord's to give his darshan. According to scriptures, he really wanted to find Radha Kund and Shama Kund. And he was asking in the area of Aritagram, where Aristasura was liberated by Krishna. He knew it was in that area. And he was asking the sages and the rishis and the villagers, and no one had any clue where it could be. But being Krishna and Sri Radha in one, Radha Bhava Duti Suvalitam Krishna Swarupam, he found two puddles in a paddy field. And everybody would walk by those puddles. Sometimes their cows or buffaloes would drink from the puddle. And here is this most beautiful, most merciful sannyasi who is attracting everyone's hearts. We spoke yesterday when he first came to Braj Bhumi in Mathura at the Keshavji temple, Krishna's birth site. He performed kirtan. It was so beautiful. The tears of love and compassion that poured from his lotus-like eyes, his long arms that extended below his knees, raised very high, invited everyone to participate. And literally, according to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, hundreds and thousands of people, where they all came from, very difficult to understand. Everyone from everywhere was coming to be part of this kirtan. In his association, they forgot all the sufferings of material existence because he flooded them. Param drispa nivartate. With the bhav, the love of the soul. So here he was in a little paddy field, and he sees these ordinary looking little puddles
and he's offering his prostrated dandavat pranams. In ecstasy, he's crying, he's chanting, he's dancing, he's offering prayers. He's bathing in those puddles. He's taking the mud from the puddles and putting the 12 tilak marks on his body, and he's getting Balabhadra Bhattacharya's assistant to collect it for him to take with him wherever he goes. He discovered Radha Kund and Shama Kund. He lived at Akrura Ghat. He would go to Imli Tal. It is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita the many places that he discovered. And on his, after being in Vrindavan for 2 months, just to please his devotees, he was willing to leave. He did not want to leave, but it was the desire of his devotees. And on his way, he was carrying the treasures of his experiences of Vrindavan in his heart in such a special way. Just days after he left here, at Prayag, he met Rupa Goswami. And for 10 days instructed him. And then just after that, he went to Varanasi and met with Sanatan Goswami and instructed him for 2 months, then returned to Puri. But he told both of them, on my behalf, you go to Vrindavan. I want to be there, but my mother and all my devotees want me to be in Puri. So to fulfill their wishes, I will be there. But on my behalf, you go to Vrindavan. And you rediscover on the basis of the holy scriptures, of the ancient maps, and the realizations, the love that I empower within you. You discover these holy places that are forever there, but just forgotten. And you excavate them. And rediscover the ancient deities that have been there for since the time of Krishna's great-grandson. And build temples for them. Vrindavan was a simple forest at that time. There was no lights. There was no running water. Believe it or not, there was no air conditioning. I was recently with someone who told me when they were children, there was practically no such thing as air conditioning. Only the wealthiest people had air conditioning. Lived his whole life without air conditioning. And it was no big thing. Because if you don't have it, you don't need it. But now, cars are air-conditioned, houses are air-conditioned, stores are air-conditioned. If in the summer, it's unlivable, it's impossible to survive without air conditioning. You see, that's the way the world is. Srila Prabhupada explains that we make countless unnecessary necessities. We could live so nicely without all these things, but when we have them, and everybody else seems to have them, then we need them. And in the material sense, progress is when we have more and more facilities to provide for unnecessary necessities. And we become dependent on. The more we have, the more we depend on what we have. But from a spiritual perspective, which was so much personified by the six Goswamis, real progress in our life is Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. It's our detachment. Progress is detachment. How much we don't need any of the stuff. How much we are not dependent on things. We learn to depend on Krishna. Sharanagati. We learn to surrender to Krishna. And then we become really filled with something so beautiful. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, they were prime minister and home ministers for the king of Bengal. They were likened to billionaires. But they left everything to come to Vrindavan on the order of Lord Chaitanya. And they were sleeping only on the ground in the summer, in the winter. They would only wear clothes, just simple kopan, just a cloth that goes around your waist, maybe a little chadar. And they only took those clothes that other people threw out as garbage and wash them nicely and put them on. And they would beg for food. And Vrindavan at that time was a very simple village and forest, mostly forest. So what do people give beggars? They were always absorbed in the highest happiness of the love of the gopis. Jiva Goswami, their nephew, came to live with them. He wrote over 400,000 beautiful Sanskrit verses in poetry. And along with Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, they wrote hundreds and hundreds and thousands of verses, dozens, hundreds of books. Nobody could write like this today. It was all original composition. There was no computers. There was no dictaphones. There was no printing presses. They would just take some bark from trees and somehow or other make some paper, and then get some herbs in the ground and make some ink, and just, you know, dip something in it and scratch. They had to actually scratch it in. Sometimes palm leaves. You see, we really don't need all this technology. We can use it in Krishna's service. But if we depend on it, it becomes an impediment. Real detachment, real freedom. You can have computers. You could even ride in airplanes. Yukta Vairagya is, we're not depending on these things. We will use whatever's favorable for Krishna's service. And if all the stuff gets taken away, we'll just go on serving with whatever Krishna provides. and will be happy. Why? Because Krishna's happy. Bhakti is not about me being happy. Bhakti is about Krishna being happy. When you water the root of the tree, that water extends everywhere. Because that's love. If you love someone dearly, deeply, profoundly, and that person is miserable, can you be happy? But if you really love someone, and there are so many instances in history where we're willing to endure all kinds of suffering or even death for the happiness of a loved one. In material sense, that's considered true love. It's that kind of sacrificial love that touches our hearts when we read about it or see it. But the perfection, the truth of that love, is the soul's desire to see Krishna happy. And that's part and parcel of Krishna's love within our soul. Sri Radha only wants Krishna's happiness. And Krishna only wants our happiness. That is the spiritual world. To depend on that love, whatever the situation that may come in our life, health or disease, success or failure, victory or defeat, heat or cold, honor or dishonor, Krishna, how can I please you? How can I make you happy? That consciousness and the endeavors that are born of that consciousness is bhakti. And Krishna reciprocates. This is described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He says the greatest contradiction that's impossible to understand with material intelligence, these truths can actually be understood only by Bhagavan's grace, is that the gopis, they absolutely don't have the slightest thought ever for their own happiness. They don't care about their own happiness because the depth of their love, they just want Krishna to be happy. They just want Sri Radharani to be happy with Krishna and Krishna to be happy with Sri Radharani. And because they have no desire for their own happiness, Krishna gives them the ultimate, ever-increasing, complete happiness. Rupa Goswami tells that when Sri Radha is serving Krishna, if tears come to her eyes so much that she can't properly see to serve, she condemns her ecstasy. And he gives another example of Daruka, Krishna's servant. He was fanning Krishna very nicely. It was a hot day. And as he was seeing the beauty of Krishna, he went into such ecstasy. His arms were trembling and tears were welling in his eyes, and he couldn't even see Krishna due to his ecstatic love. And he was condemning his ecstasy. Go away. I just want to make Krishna cool and happy. To the degree we're actually detached, we can be completely attached to God, to Krishna.
when Narottam Das Thakur came to Sri Radha Damodar temple, he was living with these devotees. Lokanath Goswami at the time, he was feeling great separation from Lord Chaitanya, who was his best friend as a youth, from Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who had left this world, who were his Shiksha gurus and dearmost friends. And he was living in such simplicity. And Narottam Das Thakur, he wanted what Lokanath Goswami had. Materially, he had nothing. But spiritually, he had everything. Lokanath Goswami told Narottam Das Thakur, I have already made a resolution that I will never initiate anyone in my life. I haven't done it, and I have no intention to do so. I'm sorry, I cannot fulfill your wish. What is a blessing? Sometimes we ask for blessings. Sometimes we demand blessings. Sometimes we try to purchase blessings. But that means we don't understand what a blessing is. From a spiritual perspective, a blessing is the spontaneous good wishes that are coming from the heart of a saintly person. When that spontaneous good wishes come from the heart, that is truly a blessing. Krishna is the origin of blessing. He is Varada. So Narottam Das Thakur didn't demand. He didn't debate. He didn't expect. He served. Lokanath Goswami would not allow anyone to serve him. But Narottam Das Thakur understood every morning he bathes in the Yamuna, and before he would go in the forest, he would respond to nature's call. So Narottam, early morning, would go to that place, and he would clean it with his own hands very carefully. While he was doing it, he wasn't taking selfies. posting it on Facebook. Except for the Paramatma Krishna in his heart, nobody in the entire creation knew what he was doing. Even Lokanath Goswami didn't know. And he didn't want anybody to know. He just wanted to serve. He had such a genuine desire to serve. And this is what bhakti is about. It's not about doing something to get fame and followers. It's about pleasing Krishna. For many days, in the middle of the night, he would go into this dark place. He didn't have flashlights. But somehow or other in the moonlight, he would clean. And every day when Lokanath Goswami, or every early morning when he would come, everything was so fresh and nice. And where is yesterday's deposits?
So after some days, it was just so pleasing and so nice to be there. So he decided to rise really early in the morning and go to see who's coming. And he was behind bushes, and there he saw Narottam Das Thakur. The little brush on his knees sweeping and with water sprinkling. He was cleaning with the same type of care and devotion as a pujari cleans the deities. And he was just doing it to please his guru, without his guru even knowing. That was his service. And when Lokanath Goswami saw this, his heart flooded. Narottam, what are you doing? You are the son of a king. You are living in great wealth. You're one of the greatest scholars in the world of the scriptures. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu have personally appeared in your life and given you grace and direction. Why? Why are you here in the middle of the night, every night, cleaning my urine and stool? Narottam bowed his head with folded palms, and with a faltering voice, he said, "My beloved Guru Maharaj, I have given up all those things in this world, and I have attained the greatest wealth. This menial service to a Vaishnav." Lokanath Goswami, he decided, "I will initiate you." Narottam didn't demand it. And to the degree, we cannot imitate this, but to the degree our relationship is based in selfless service with Krishna in the center, to that degree we're really connected with our guru, with the Vaishnavas, and with Krishna. Srinivasacharya, Shamananda, Narottam Das Thakur, they all had different Diksha gurus. Srinivas was initiated by Gopal Bhatt Goswami. Shamananda Goswami by Hriday Chaitanya in Odisha. But they all studied with Jiva Goswami, and they were best of friends. In the Radha Damodar temple, they would study. That is the place Rupa Goswami had his bhajan kutir. That is the place that Jiva Goswami laid his body in samadhi. That is the place that the six Goswamis would regularly meet to take prasad, to have sankirtan, to discuss Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and Sri Radharani and Govinda's leelas. That is the place they would discuss all of their various realizations for revealing Vrindavan to the world and making it a holy place. Revealing it as a holy place. And building temples and showing the sites of Krishna's pastimes so people could come and experience the grace of Sri Brajbhumi. It is the place they discussed their various literatures being written. It's where the library of all the Goswami's books were being kept. And that is the place where His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada made his home. He was living at the Bamsi Gopal Temple near Yamuna. And somehow or other, the two rooms came available. It was actually Radha Damodar, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Pushpa Samadhi is there at Radha Damodar, as is Jiva Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Bhugarbha Goswami and so many others. They actually invited Srila Prabhupada to be there, because they knew his mission. Vedaham samithitani varatamanani chajana bhavishyani chabutani mam tubedana kashjana. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, he knows everything that has happened in the past, all things happening in the present, and all things to come. That is Krishna. He knows everything. That is the inconceivable, unbelievable, incredible Shakti of the Lord. He can know everything that's going to happen and not in any way interfere with our independence. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. It's beyond logic. It can only be understood through grace. And that grace is accessed when we hear with faith from those who have that faith. Srila Prabhupada lived for many years at Radha Damodar Temple. To serve the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he has empowered the six Goswamis. It was the order of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. And there he prayed and worshipped. And there he served. He had no facilities. He had no one to help him. But he was absolutely absorbed and happy because he was pleasing Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita tells in many places, as the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, that Lord Chaitanya came to spread pure bhakti through Harinam Sankirtan throughout the world. We have quoted that Lord Chaitanya, he made a garland with the flowers of the holy names of Krishna, Harinam, and prema, pure love of Krishna. He wove a garland with love for Krishna and Harinam. And then he garlanded the entire world. So when Lord Chaitanya sent Rupa and Sanatan Goswami to Vrindavan, he did it to reveal Vrindavan to the entire planet. And the very headquarters where they met, they prayed, They chanted and they danced and they feasted and they prepared. Srila Prabhupada was invited to prepare for his mission in that place. And it was 50 years ago from this year that Srila Prabhupada departed from Vrindavan. After 30 days at sea, arriving in a strange place with nothing and no one, he explained he felt complete confidence because he had the order of his guru. He had some boxes of his translations and purports of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he had the holy names of Krishna. He was depending on that grace. He was trying his best. We described yesterday how on November 8th, 50 years ago, he wrote a letter to a god brother asking for some help, some funding. Let's get some property, send some people. So he was trying, but he was never discouraged because he wasn't depending on that. Whether he lives or dies, he's trying to do his service. That was his mood. Jaladutta, he offered his prayers. Krishna, I have no words that can be understandable to these people. Let them be happy. Speak through me. Only your words can make them happy. And now, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people are coming to Vrindavan by the divine grace of one man who left here penniless when he was 69 years old, but whose heart was filled with Krishna's compassion. Yesterday, we were discussing Krishna's appearance simultaneously in Gokul and Mathura. The next morning, Yashoda Mai, she woke up from her sleep and she saw little baby Krishna laying next to her. Can you imagine waking up and finding baby Krishna? Nanda and Yashoda, Jiva Goswami explains, previously they had no children. And because they were the leaders of the whole Braj Bhumi, Braj means a community that is moving about wherever the best place for taking care of the cows. And everyone in Gokul, they were yearning for Nanda and Yashoda to have a child. But there was no child. Nanda Maharaj's grandfather, his father, Parjanya, Krishna's grandfather, he was performing pujas and prayers for Krishna to have, for Nanda Maharaj to have a child. But Nanda and Yashoda would talk together and share something. Nanda Maharaj said, there was a beautiful, beautiful little baby child that appears to me in my heart. Not exactly a dream. It's something very real. He has a complexion like a dark monsoon cloud, and he has beautiful, beautiful lotus-like eyes. And his lips like the bimba fruit, when they smile, it completely conquers my heart and my mind. I'm in love with this child. And Yashoda Mai, she said, I'm also seeing that same child. He's appearing in my heart. Krishna wanted to invoke within them the yearning and the longing to have him as their child. And they did. And the different Brijabasis were asking him, you're not having any children, do this yajna, do this sacrifice, do this fast. But they understood that these things, they can only bring about material results, karma kanda, and they can bring about children, but the child that we're yearning for can only come through pure love and pure devotion. They worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead with all their hearts and did Dwadasi fast. And then that child entered Yogamaya and carried that little baby that they yearned for within the heart of Nanda, and then entered the heart of Yashoda Mai. So on the day of Nandotsav, in the early morning, Yashoda Mai, she gave birth and went to sleep and didn't. Because of Yoga Maya's influence, she really didn't know. She couldn't remember. She just woke up, and there was the most beloved object of her praying that revealed her, himself in her heart as a newborn infant baby laying beside her. She embraced the child. He was born with beautiful, fully grown long hair curling around his moon-like face. She gazed in his face, and he gazed in her face. And her heart flooded with motherly love, the motherly love of the spiritual world. And here this newborn little infant, so small, so soft, so totally apparently vulnerable and fragile, is the absolute truth, the source of Mahavishnu. Garbhodakshai Vishnu, Chirodakshai Vishnu. The source of Narayan, Narasingha, Varaha. The source of Shiva. The source of all the universes and all of creation. The intelligence of the intelligence, the strength of the strong. The creator, maintainer and annihilator of all existence. And he doesn't know how to talk. He doesn't even know how to crawl. He's just laying helplessly looking at Yashoda, like any child would look at mother. And when the news came to Nanda Maharaj, who at the time was milking the cows, very auspicious time. And one of the, I believe it was a Brahmin lady, who came by Rohini Devi's direction to inform Nanda Maharaj. But as soon as Nanda Maharaj saw the tears of enthusiasm, excitement, and happiness in that lady, he knew that his child was born. She didn't even have to tell him. He just started giving her gifts. And Nanda Maharaj, he was so excited. He didn't know this child was God. He was beyond that. He would walk a few steps and fall down in ecstasy, and then he'd walk a few more steps and fall down. He didn't even know where he was going. And then he finally came to Nanda Bhavan in Sri Gokul Mahavan. And Rohini took the little baby child from Yashodamai and put him in the arms of Nanda Maharaj. And there was a glorious festival. It was a festival of the heart. It was a festival of love. You see, the nature of spiritual relationships, in the true sense, is there cannot be envy. Spiritual relationships, we are truly well-wishers. When we see someone getting the blessings of the Lord, we become greatly happy. When we see someone getting blessed, that is our great joy. From the heart of the hearts, the love of the Brijabasis was being expressed to celebrate the good fortune of Nanda and Yashoda. And you see, because they were celebrating the good fortune of Nanda and Yashoda, Nanda and Yashoda's good fortune became their good fortune. This is a very subtle secret of spiritual psychology. When we actually celebrate how someone is getting Krishna's blessing, it becomes our blessing. When we're depressed or envious, then there's no real spiritual connection. We've lost what is potentially ours. When we appreciate when a devotee is blessed or gets success, we actually get the benefits. Even though we don't want it, it naturally comes. If we appreciate someone's accomplishment in Krishna consciousness, just by our appreciation, we may actually get more benefits than the person who's done it. Because Krishna is so pleased when we appreciate what's good in bhakti. So everyone was absolutely joyful. There's no such thing as a celebration like this in the material world, where everyone's hearts are completely, totally united with joy because this little baby boy is born to Nanda and Yashoda. And they didn't even know he's God, but they loved him more than they loved God. Does that make sense? As we make spiritual advancement, we realize it's the only thing that makes sense. Everything else really doesn't make any sense. They were dancing. They were laughing. There was Brahmins giving blessings and chanting mantras, and there was bands playing beautiful ragas of spiritual songs. Everything was decorated so nicely. Hundreds and thousands of cows, every cow was decorated so beautifully. They put gold on their hooves and gold on their horns, and they put beautiful silk over their backs, and the bulls also. And the cows were in ecstasy, and the bulls were in ecstasy, and the peacocks were dancing, and the birds were singing, and the bees were humming. Everyone was happy. Ananda. And so simple. They were taking care of cows, so they had some dahi and some ghee and milk, and they were mixing them with different colors, and they were throwing it on each other as offerings of love. It wasn't a battle. It was an offering of love. And it was just so wonderful. One time during Nandotsav in Radha Gopinath's temple, some Brijbasis came from Barsana. And they brought all kinds of, you know, yogurt with turmeric and all of that. And they started throwing it on everybody. And they were really happy. But it took us weeks to clean the walls and but Nandotsav is the festival of all festivals. And actually, when we really have faith in Krishna, that festival of all festivals, the most blissful, glorious day in the whole creation, celebrated by the Brijbasis, we have a chance to celebrate it too. And actually, it was on that day of Nandotsav that Srimati Radharani and her beloved Sri Gopinath sent His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada to take birth within this world on Nandotsav of 1896. He came to the world especially to bring that community of joy. Of praying. After this wonderful festival, Nanda Maharaj had to go to Mathura to pay tax to Kamsa. See, devotional service has many different flavors. He had his responsibilities. So the senior gopas, along with Nanda Maharaj, had to go to Mathura to give taxes to Kamsa, who was so cruel and so evil. There was a great king named Devamitta, and he had a Kshatriya wife and a Vaishya wife. And from the Kshatriya wife, Surasena was born. And from the Vaishya wife, Parjanya. And Surasena became one of the great kings of Mathura. And Parjanya, he was so gracious, so charitable, so gentle and respectful and loving. Everyone loved him. And he loved to farm and take care of cows. So they gave him Gokul Mahavan. And he had five sons, Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sanandana, and Nandan. And the middle child was Nanda Maharaj. Surasena gave birth, and among his children was Vasudev. So Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj were related, and they were best of friends. And here, Nanda Maharaj has to go to pay taxes to Kamsa, who has put his own cousin, brother, and dear friend Vasudev in prison with his wife Devaki for years, and slaughtered six of their children. While he was in Mathura, he met with Vasudev. And Vasudev was asking, how is your child? He didn't tell him that I actually brought your child. It's actually my child. But he was so concerned for that child. And he told Nanda Maharaj, I think you better go back to Vrindavan, to Gokul very soon. And meanwhile, Kamsa, due to bad association, he called upon Putana. She was a mystic yogi. But after she got her powers, she became so corrupt and evil. She could change her form to any form she wished. She could fly in the sky by sitting on a branch of a tree. And her lust in life was the flesh and blood of newborn babies. Kamsa ordered Putana because Yogamaya, when she appeared in the air before Kamsa, when he was about to kill her, she said, you are a fool, Kamsa. The son who was meant to kill you is already born somewhere else. So Kamsa ordered every child born in that timeline must be massacred. And Putana was very enthusiastic. Tens and thousands of children. She would just grab them and kill them and eat them. Really evil. Can you imagine someone like that today? And she came while Nanda Maharaj and the leading cowherd men were away. She entered Mahavan. But she disguised herself. Jiva Goswami explains, she was the most beautiful woman in the world. Her original form was monstrous. And when she came into Vrindavan, her beautiful eyes were glancing at people, and everyone felt so blessed. And the Brijavasis, they're simple people. They were thinking, is this the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi? Is this Sachi, the wife of Indra? Is this Parvati, the wife of Shiva? Who is this beautiful woman who has such qualities? Is she coming to bless our newborn baby, Gopal? And she walked right into the room. And there Yashoda and Rohini and the other elderly gopis were assembled. And they were so mesmerized by this guest. She walked right up to little Krishna who was just born. He was only a few days old. So tiny, so soft, so completely apparently dependent on the compassion of others. But Krishna within her heart gave her a little message. When she looked at this little baby, she was thinking, he could destroy the whole universe. And Krishna looked at her and closed his eyes. Because she was going to come as a mother. And she pretended to have such motherly affection, she literally lifted up the infant baby and put him on her lap. And Yashoda and Rohini was thinking, oh, Krishna's being blessed. What they didn't know is the most terrible, powerful, fast-acting poison, a mystical poison, was smeared on her breast. And she took little Krishna. It's described that she was like a deadly sword in a very ornamented case. She looked like an elegant jeweled necklace, but she was actually the most venomous serpent. And she pushed her breast in little baby Krishna's mouth. And Krishna's lips were so soft and so small and so reddish. And he just started to suck. And as he sucked her milk, she actually had some motherly affection for Krishna because milk came out. He sucked the milk. He sucked all the poison. He sucked all of her anartas, all of her sins, all of her cruelty, all of her lust and anger and envy and arrogance and greed and illusion. He sucked it all out of her. And then he started to suck her very prana, her very life. And this was becoming really painful. So she tried to rip Krishna away from her. But little Krishna, with his tiny little lotus hands, his fingers. Have you seen the fingers of a newborn child? They look like if you just breathe on them, they'll break. That's what Krishna's fingers looked like. But he started to squeeze. And it caused her such immense pain. She actually resumed her original form, which was gigantic. And she was screaming. It was a deafening roar. Child, leave me, leave me. And with all of her mighty mystical power, she was trying to take Krishna away. But Krishna just kept sucking and squeezing. And by Krishna's own will, even though he was on her, he dragged her to run into a forest. And it was very strategically planned. He went to Kamsa's favorite fruit orchard. And as she was screaming, he sucked all her life out of her, and she fell to the ground. She was by that time, by her mystic potencies trying to get Krishna off, she expanded to 12 miles in size. Now, recently I was in California and I met this person, and he was 7 feet tall. He was a basketball player. And I think I'm 5'6". And when a 5'6" person looks at a 7-foot person, he really looked gigantic. Well, Putana was 12 miles in height. And he fell down and completely destroyed all Kamsa's fruit trees. Krishna can serve so many purposes simultaneously. And meanwhile, Yashoda Mai and Rohini and all of the other gopis and the gopas who were assembled, when they saw this gigantic witch screaming with little tiny baby Krishna on her, they were in absolute fear and anxiety. But this type of fear and anxiety is the highest level of peace and fearlessness. Because they were fearful for Krishna. They were not fearful for themselves. When we fear for the deity, we become fearless. When we fear for the Vaishnavas, we become fearless. Higher than being fearless is to fear for Krishna. Because in the sense that we're discussing now, that fear is based on pure love. And Yashoda Mai was in such grief, and Rohini, they were thinking, why did we let that lady pick up Krishna? Krishna's more dear to us than our own life. And yet, she came in and she looked so nice, and we didn't even have any suspicion. Where is our love for Krishna? We let this stranger pick him up, and now she's taken. And they didn't know what happened when she went running out. They were grief-stricken. And the gopas and the gopis went running around to see what happened to Krishna. And Krishna understood exactly what was in their hearts. And he was playing very blissfully and smiling. Playing. He didn't even know how to crawl yet. But he situated himself right on a prominent part of his body, and he was just smiling. And they looked way up, and they had to climb on Putana and pick up Krishna and run back and bring him to Yashoda Mai. And she was so afraid what happened to him. But then he drank her milk, and she understood he was safe. Our beloved Lord Narayan protected him. That was her mood. And her and the other gopis began to perform so many different types of pujas to protect Krishna from further dangers. They bathed him with cow urine. They whisked him with cow tails. They had Brahmins chanting special protective stotrams and mantras and slokas. They had Brahmins doing pujas. And they prayed. From their heart of hearts, they prayed. And when Nanda Maharaj and his friends were returning from Mathura, they saw this gigantic form laying in the forest. And what is this? And the gopis told them exactly what happened. So she was taking so much space that they chopped her body up and burned it. And the smoke that came was the most intoxicatingly attractive incense. It was so sweet. Because Krishna touched her. And that Putana, because she approached Krishna with motherly affection, as a mother, even though it was mixed up with so much other stuff, those few seconds of pain took away all the other stuff, and all that was left was her motherly love, and Krishna accepted it. And she died remembering Krishna at that moment. And her soul attained the spiritual world for the most loving service as a mother for Krishna for all eternity. Now, I'm not really prepared for this yatra. So what I'm going to do, at least for a while, is when I tell a story of Krishna, share a memory from Lord Chaitanya's pastimes along with it. Do I have your permission? Because we're celebrating Lord Chaitanya coming to Vrindavan 500 years ago. Brajendra Nandana Jai Sachi Shuto Hoilo She Balarama Hoilo Nitai. I told that story of Narottam Das Thakur just to prepare us for this verse that he wrote. Everyone let us sing. Brajendra Nandana Jai Sachi Shuta Hoilo Se. Balaram Hoilo Nitai. That the son of Nanda Maharaj, Sri Gopal Krishna, appears as the son of Sachi, Nimai. Nimai is the name of Lord Chaitanya when he's a child, because he was born under a neem tree. And Balaram appeared as Lord Nityananda. The pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And at this time we're focusing on his childhood pastimes, are non-different than the pastimes of Krishna in Gokul. Non-different in the sense that the same identical exchanges of rati and ras, love and loving reciprocation, were shared. When Putana manifested her form and ran out into the forest, what was the anguish of Krishna's parents and all of his relatives? But you see that anguish, they were totally absorbed in Krishna. Sometimes, even in our lives, in this world, difficulties could really get us absorbed in Krishna. How many of you have tried to chant attentive japa in an airplane going across an ocean? It's not that easy. But when suddenly, emergency landing, you're all very likely going to die within minutes. That's what they're saying. If any of you have been in an experience like that, I have. You're not falling asleep. Really attentive, Japa. Absolutely intentive, Japa. Really attentive. And you're really humble. If you want to be more humble than a blade of grass, then be on that airplane. Because there's nothing you can do to save yourself. Even if you're a billionaire, even if you know 10 million slokas, even if you're a GBC, there's nothing you can do. It's an emergency landing. And they're telling you, you have to get down and your head has to go between your legs. And then you hear all the luggage going, and then you're going toward the airport and you're seeing all these, about 25 ambulances and fire trucks waiting for you. And everything's shaking. And all of a sudden you hit the ground and you bounce up about 200 feet. And then you hit the ground again and bounce up. And this is a 747 jet. There's nothing you can do. Except chant. And somehow or other, when the plane lands nicely, you realize that was the most attentive japa I've ever done in an airplane. Now, most of us never want that to happen again. But we're really happy it happened. So when there's fear and anxiety, it really absorbs us. And when there's love for Krishna, samsidhir haritoshanam, then hundreds of billions of trillions, infinitely more anxiety than we could have for anything that could possibly happen to us is for something to happen to Krishna. The gopis, they suffer miserably when they think that when Krishna is walking barefoot in the pasture grounds of Vrindavan, he sometimes steps on a pebble because his feet are so soft. And if you just touch his feet, they change colors. That's how soft they are. And yet he's going barefoot in the forest. They're willing to enter the flames of hell for billions of years, if it will relieve Krishna from the pain that may come by stepping on a pebble. That's their love. It only can make sense for someone who loves. So, when Lord Chaitanya was just a little baby, he was crawling. It's described in great detail in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. Just in front of the house of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, Lord Chaitanya saw a gigantic serpent coiled up. Now he's just a little baby and he's just learning to crawl. And he crawls right up to that serpent and lays down on top of his coils. And the family sees this. And as far as they could see, this is a poison snake, a huge snake. And he has gigantic fangs or teeth. And his body could just squeeze that child to death, and he could eat that child within a second. So the whole family's in the same anxiety as when Krishna was taken away by Putana. They're beside themselves in grief, but they're feeling totally helpless. Because if they approach the snake might get angry and bite Krishna, Lord Nimai, or even eat Nimai. And Nimai's smiling, and he's moving around, bouncing on the snake's coils. Don't just hear this, but hear it. Hear it means feel it. What is Satchimata, the mother, thinking? She would be willing to be eaten by that snake in a second if it would save Nimai. But if they even come one step close to it, the snake might get angry and bite him. So they're feeling totally helpless. They're weeping. They're crying. They're fainting. They're praying. And they're loudly chanting the holy names. Totally, helplessly crying out the holy names. Because their Prananath, the Lord of their very life, is in such danger. And he's helpless. And this snake looks so strong and cruel. And in their state of spiritual anxiety to the limits, they were crying out, Garuda, Garuda! Because Garuda likes to capture snakes. And when the snake saw all the anxiety of the people, he just straightened himself out and slithered away. That snake was actually Anantashesha, who came to render some seva for Nimai by letting Nimai get nice rest on his coils. But nobody else could recognize that. And as soon as the serpent slithered away, immediately Nimai's relatives ran over and picked up Nimai and started embracing him and thanking Lord Krishna for saving him. And then they put him down. And what did Nimai do? He went crawling as fast as he could back to catch the snake. And they caught him. And it is described by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, anyone who hears this story with faith will be forever delivered from the serpent of birth and death. How they were chanting Krishna's names when they were seeing Nimai in this condition. Why does Nimai do this to his devotees? Why does he put himself in such conditions? For one reason, to increase their love. And it does increase their love. Even limitless love can be increased by the grace of Sri Krishna. When Krishna was about 3 months old in Gokul, Yashoda Mai wanted to celebrate a festival called the Uthana. It's the festival where a baby child just begins to slant its body and crawl. Now, in the Vedic civilization, these are some skaras where they have really nice festivals for blessings. In a spiritual sense, when we celebrate these different types of stages of a child's life, it's for the purpose of bringing blessings to that child. So there was a glorious festival in Vrindavan because Krishna's slanting his body. This is so wonderful. And there was Brahmins chanting, and there was bands playing, and everyone was dancing, and Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj was giving so many beautiful gifts to everyone and offering prayers. And because Yashoda Mai, to get all blessings for Krishna, she was serving everyone so nicely, and Krishna seemed really tired. So she put a nice, beautiful little soft bed and placed Krishna under a cart so she could tend to all the guests. But what she didn't know is there was an asura, a very evil, demoniac personality who was actually in a ghostly body. He didn't have his own physical form. He had more of an ethereal form. But he could enter into forms and manipulate them. So this was a hand cart that was there in their family for a long time. But Shakatasura entered into that form. And his purpose was to kill Krishna. And in killing Krishna, he would kill the hearts of all the Brijabasis, and everyone would be unable to live. So he was just about to crush Krishna to death. And Krishna's just laying there, and he knows everything, but he looks like he doesn't know anything. And by his own Yoga Maya potency, he's hungry for Yashoda Mai's milk. And Yashoda Mai's busy taking care of guests. So little Gopal cries for his mother's milk, but she doesn't hear him. So he cries louder. And then with his tiny little soft, gentle lotus foot, he kicked the wheel of the cart, because the cart's huge. It's way above him. But he kicked the wheel, and just by touching the wheel with his foot, everything. There were all these brass pots and vessels. They all came tumbling down. The entire cart was cracked. The wheel was dislocated from its axle. It fell to the ground, and it made an enormous sound. Everything pounding against the ground. And it disturbed the entire celebration. And everyone came running. And Yashoda Mai, she sees this cart and everything on it, all on the ground. And I put my Gopal under that cart. He must be totally crushed to death. My heart of hearts. She's practically blinded with grief, and she's trying to run to the sight, but she can hardly run. What happened? Why? And when the residents of Vrindavan came, they saw the cart was in so many different pieces, splintered all over the place. And these gigantic pots and vessels and other goods that were on it, maybe thousands of pounds, were just all over the ground. And in the middle of it, untouched, was Gopal, smiling. Yashoda Mai picked him up and embraced him, put him on lap, and he drank her milk just to show her that he's safe and he's happy. And again, they performed so many nice little ceremonies for Krishna to protect him for the future. When Nimai was a little boy, he didn't kill demons, but he awakened the same type of loving sentiments in his devotees. When Krishna was a little child in his Balila, from his birth till 5 years old, the predominant relationships he was exchanging was Vatsalya Ras, especially with Nanda and Yashoda. When he was in his Poganda Lila from 5 to 10 or 6 to 10, the primary exchanges were Sakya Ras with Balaram and his friends Subal and Sridhama, Stoka Krishna and Arjun and Ujjvala. And when he was in his Kaishor Lila from 11 till 15, his primary loving exchanges were in Madhurya Bhav with the gopis of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So little Nimai, he was just a little child. And Sachi Mata celebrated the exact festival. It's written there in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. Little Nimai just slanted his body and was just beginning to crawl. And it was called the Balasya Utan. Same. So Sachi Mata wanted all auspiciousness. So she went to the Ganges, Mother Ganga, and she performed so many pujas and sevas for Mother Ganga, offering flowers and offering lamps and offering prayers just to bless little Nimai because he's just about to start crawling. And she brought with her many of her relatives and friends, and they were all performing the pujas and celebrating this glorious event. And as Sachi Mata was returning back to her home, she gave wonderful gifts to all the ladies who celebrated with her. And she requested all of them, please, from your heart, bless my Nimai. And these were true blessings. From their hearts, with love, with affection, with compassion, they showered their blessings on little Nimai. One time, little Nimai, this is just starting to crawl, hardly even crawling. When Sachi Mata and Jagannath Mishra left the house for just a few minutes, little Nimai destroyed everything in the house. He took all the vessels of yogurt and milk and ghee and just threw them on all the walls. He broke all the pots. He took all the rice and the dal and the wheat and just threw it everywhere and just... And when Nanda and Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi came in the house, they couldn't believe. Everything was destroyed. Everything was everywhere. Who could have done it? Our little Nimai can't even stand up yet. What has happened? Similar to Shakatasura. They were thinking, some demon must have come into the house. Some ghostly demon must have come, and they wanted to harm Nimai. But because Nimai is so pious, and because God protects little children, and because we offer so many pujas and prayers for Nimai, Lord Narayan protected him, and that demon must have been so angry that he couldn't hurt Nimai, that he destroyed everything in the house with anger. There was no other explanation. And they started doing so many different pujas and so many different rituals and so many different prayers for the protection of Nimai as they picked him up, and he was just smiling. He was smiling in a way like, I don't know what happened. Once, when Krishna was just starting to walk, Nanda Maharaj said, please bring my shoes. And he had wooden shoes. And little Gopal put the wooden shoes on his head and brought it to Nanda Maharaj. There's wonderful paintings of this pastime. How Krishna is so eager to serve his devotees. Krishna is taking the shoes of his devotee and carrying it on his head with great effort. And in a similar way, when Nimai just started to walk, Jagannath Mishra said, Nimai, bring my book. So Nimai went running, and it was a big book, because there are scriptures. And as he went to get the book, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, they heard the tinkling of ankle bells. Krishna's ankle bells. And they were not like that. That was not one of my special effects. They never put ankle bells on Nimai. Where is the sound coming from? So they were astounded. And the ankle bells are tinkling. And they're tinkling, and they're tinkling, and they're so sweet. These ankle bell sounds are melting Sachi and Jagannath's heart. They're thinking, where is it coming from? And little Nimai comes running up and gives his book to his father. And then smiles and goes to play with his friends. And Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Deva are looking at each other. Where were those ankle bell sounds coming from? He doesn't have ankle bells. It mesmerized them. They went in their house where the book was, and they saw on the floor and on the walls there were beautiful footprints with all the markings of Krishna's footprints. lotuses and clubs and flags. And they were astounded. The tinkling of ankle bells, they were coming from Krishna. Krishna was in our house. Because of their Vatsalya Bhav, Nimai wouldn't allow them to think that he was Krishna. They were, Jagannath Misha said, it must be my Shalagram Shila named Damodar. He must be performing pastimes in our house. Damodar Shila has taken a form of Krishna, and he's gone all over our house and walked on our floors and our walls and put all these beautiful footprints on. So we should do puja to Damodar. So Sachimata made a beautiful feast, and Jagannath Misha performed so many beautiful ceremonies of worship, and they were celebrating, so happy that Damodar, our Shila, is having pastimes in our house, and little Nimai is just watching and smiling. And one day, when Krishna was laying in Sachimata's lap, he happened to just lay up and pointed his feet up, and she saw the same markings on his little tiny lotus feet. When Nimai was a baby, he would cry. And the people of the home, seeing him cry, was more painful to their heart than anything in the world. More painful than atomic nuclear bombs dropping on their heads or earthquakes or economic collapses, was to see Nimai cry. That means he wasn't happy. That means there was some pain. They would do anything for him. The same experience when the Vrijavasis saw Krishna taken away by Putana, of that ras, of protection out of love for our child. The residents of Navadvip experienced. And because of the deep love and concern they had for Nimai's safety and happiness, nothing would stop him from crying. Whatever they did for him, he cried louder. Whatever they brought for him, they cried louder. But as soon as, in total desperation, completely helpless, turning to God to help, they cried out the holy names, Nimai would smile. A beaming smile that lit up their hearts with his affection. He was so pleased. In this way, from his very infancy, little Nimai established Prem Sankirtan. Not just ritualistic musical chanting, but chanting from the heart with love. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. This chanting has descended from Goloka, from the eternal pastimes of Sri Krishna. The gopas and the gopis forever chant this Maha Mantra. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from his earliest infancy, Krishna, in the mood of Sri Radha, revealed the pastimes of the spiritual world to all of us. It's not only the pastime of the spiritual world, but it's the means by which we can purify our hearts and enter into the pastimes of the spiritual world. Let us chant the holy names with gratitude, with humility, and with great feeling. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Much louder, please. Let us celebrate. Celebrating being in Sri Vrindavan Dham, the most holy time of Kartik, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas, with each other. Let us loudly chant with great feeling, and let us dance for the pleasure of the Vaishnavas, the pleasure of the Lord.